So today we finish up this Advent series, a series called Carrying the News. We've been looking as best we can at the story of the birth of Jesus through the eyes of the shepherds, asking what might it have been like to be there with them, to be one of them, to see all of these events unfolding right there before their eyes. And today we're going to be talking about how at the end of the story we've been studying, they return to the fields. They go back to the place from whence they came. So the story is going to kind of go full circle. We've been looking at Luke chapter 2, verses 8 through 20 every single Sunday of Advent. We're going to do the same thing today. But as usual, the passage we're going to highlight today, when you see it on the screen, will be italicized. You'll know that that's the one we're going to dig into most deeply today. So let's go ahead and get into it. Luke chapter 2, starting in verse 8, going through verse 20. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, watching over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord, and this will be a sign to you. You'll find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." And suddenly a great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven and on earth, peace to those on whom his favor rests." When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let's go. Let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. And when they had seen him, they spread the word concerning what had been told them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told. So we find sort of the conclusion of the shepherd's story, an amazing story that starts with a dark night in a field, includes angels and travel and an exceptional, unique baby, and then their return to the fields. One of the things that most struck me this week is what happened. These shepherds, first of all, hurried off. We talked about that a little bit last week, that they hurried off. They did not wait. They did not discuss it. I joked last week they didn't form a committee to decide exactly what is believable and what is not and what we're going to do in response. They simply hurried off. They were passionate and immediate in their obedience. They hurried off and they found that scene exactly as it had been described to them. Not only were they passionate and immediate in their obedience, I would imagine they were also perseverant in their obedience. Because yeah, they were given directions, go to Bethlehem. Yeah, there was a star, but it's not like they had GPS coordinates, right? It's not like they were able to follow a device and pinpoint within 12 feet where they belonged. And a star way up in the sky is kind of get you in the general vicinity. So I wonder how many mangers did they have to check? How many cows and donkeys and chickens? I don't know. Whatever the animals might have been. How many times did they have to stop and look inside and peek in and go, is this the spot? No, okay, and carry on. Now, Bethlehem was not a big city. It was a small village. But eventually, their passionate, immediate, persevering journey of faith led them to Jesus. And because of the testimony of these shepherds, we read just now that all who heard of it were what? They were amazed. They were amazed at what they heard. Which led me to this question that I want to lead you to. Does the story of Jesus still amaze you? Because it should. Now, especially around this time of year, I think sometimes we get into the, yeah, I've heard it all before. The shepherds, the wise men, all of this. And sometimes the familiarity can lead us to lose a little bit of appreciation for the amazement. But My friends, I want to remind you today, the story of Jesus, though it is an old story now, is still a story that can amaze you. His humble, miraculous birth is amazing. The power of God at work in the miracles that he did was amazing. The wisdom of God he presented in his teaching and preaching was amazing. The mercy of God he extended to the lowest and the least of his world in hope and healing was amazing. The surrender of his suffering on the cross was amazing, and the glory of his resurrection was amazing. The story of Jesus is amazing. Leave room for it to still captivate you, for it to still amaze you in ways maybe that it has not yet amazed you in your life. So the shepherds tell their story and people are amazed. But during this passage, we get a really small one-verse break in the shepherd story to hear from someone else. We get to hear what I would call sort of an insider perspective on one other character within the story, and that's Mary. In verse 19, we just get to peer a little bit inside of what's going on in her heart, in her mind, in her soul. And we're told there that she was both treasuring and pondering all of these things that were happened to her. She treasured and pondered what the shepherds had told her about their experience, probably lumping that in with everything she's personally experienced so far in this adventure of the birth of Jesus. So let's be reminded for just a moment what she already had been told before the shepherds even arrived. In Luke chapter 1, she received this message from an angelic visit of her own. She was told about her son. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end. The Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. So before the shepherds ever came, Mary had received some idea of the things that were going to be happening, of the uniqueness of the child that she would be bringing into the world. And she understood, I think, this as joyful news for the most part. However, let's just take a second to realize that even though it was very joyful news, she needed some time, understandably, to continue to process all of these things that are being shared with her about this child. We read earlier in Luke's story, in Luke chapter 1, that she was greatly troubled when she received this message initially. She wondered about what she was hearing, and she even asked the question, "How can this be?" So she received joyful news and she treasured it, but at the same time, she was pondering, she was wondering, she was maybe dreaming about what might be. I think it's this sort of line of thinking that leads us to that very well-loved Christmas song today, "Mary, Did You Know?" Right? And I have to pause for a second and say, I'm really liking this new setup. I feel like I am coming for you guys. Like, I think instead of tearing this down, we'll just extend it down the middle aisle, and then that way I can just get, like, up close and personal with many of you. Although that may cause the aisle seats to be more vacant, and that's okay. So, the song, "Mary, Did You Know?", probably familiar to many, most, or all of you, and it deals with this idea. And I've read some articles and some blog posts about, well, of course Mary knew. Look at what's happening in Luke. And yeah, it's true. Mary had received some information about who this baby would be. But to think that Mary is somehow then a robot, and she receives the information, and a switch goes off, and then all of a sudden, she is completely and totally in the know and in agreement, and I don't know that that's realistic, because we see her asking questions like, how can this be, and pondering these things. Maybe dreaming about, yes, this will be the Son of the Most High, called the Son of God, but what will that look like? And as sometimes happened, I had some of these thoughts earlier in the week in preparation. Then late in the week, I read an article that someone shared some of these exact same things, but said it way better than I could. So listen to this description. Mary knew her child would be the Messiah, as we know that God became man. But that sort of knowledge does not leave us without questions. As Mary rocked her baby to sleep night after night, did she not wonder, what it would all mean, how her child's messiahship would play out in all of its startling particularity. Luke 2:19 says, Mary treasured these things and pondered them in her heart. It's fair for us to assume she had plenty of questions among those ponderings. And the song, Mary, Did You Know?, directs its curiosity to these quandaries, not because Mary was ignorant of the facts, but because the incarnation is much more than a doctrine or an event that can simply be accepted and understood. It is a mystery to be encountered. And I love that idea. That yes, the incarnation is a doctrine, and it's something that happened in history, but it's so much more. There's so much mystery involved in what God is doing. And I think that's what Mary was. She had acceptance and faith, but she was also pondering and dreaming about what it might look like. And I think that Mary's faith probably grew every time somebody else sort of affirmed what was happening. That time she goes to meet with Elizabeth, her relative, right? And she walks in, and what does Elizabeth say? She says, man, when you walked in, that baby within me, it leaped with joy. And if you're Mary, you're going, okay, it's not just me. Things are happening with other people. And then these shepherds, probably total strangers, show up out of nowhere and say, Mary, Joseph, these really shiny guys in the sky told us to come here and find you because what we're dealing with here is a little bit out of the ordinary. And so I have to believe with every encounter like that, where Mary hears about the stories of others being affected by the birth of this baby, her faith continues to grow. And her pondering continues to unfold. I think it's true that by telling and hearing what God is doing in the lives of other people, we often find affirmation of what God is doing in our own stories. When we are willing to swap stories, listening and telling one another, here's what God is doing in my life, I think a lot of times there is like some sort of overlap that reaffirms for us some of the things God is doing in our lives, if we're willing to listen and to share. So what does this treasuring and pondering mean? When I boil it down, I've come to this conclusion. To treasure and ponder something is to deeply value it, even if you don't fully understand it yet. And my friends, isn't this really the story of grace? Grace is a gift from God, and we treasure it. We value it. But does anyone here say they completely understand all of God's grace? Of course not. There's a sense of mystery. I know I still don't understand that someone like me would receive the unmerited favor of God. Reminds me of that t-shirt or bumper sticker. I am the wretch that the song talks about, right? God's amazing grace. There is mystery to it. Yes, I deeply value it, but also I love to lean into, God, how can this be that you would love even me? We find Paul sort of hinting in this in Ephesians chapter 3. He says, I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the Lord's holy people to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. I love that phrase. To know this love that surpasses knowledge. I've said it before, I'll say it again. There is a way of knowing that's beyond your brain. I think that's what's being talked about here. That we can know the fullness and deepness of the love and grace of God in ways that go beyond our brains. Beyond knowledge. There's a mystery. And it's a beautiful thing. And I love this passage reminds us that it's only in community that we best grasp and are filled with the fullness of God's love. Together with who? With all of the Lord's holy people. Gathered together, swapping stories about how God is on the move and doing new things in our lives and hearing about the lives of others. So Mary's a great model for someone who treasures and ponders the gift of grace and the gift of Jesus. But treasuring and pondering are not the full story. Because what we see at the conclusion of this story with the shepherds helps to fill out all of the story. Because after the chorus of angels, after the journey to Bethlehem, after finding the child, coming face to face with this promised one, it's time for them to head home. And really, there's something about going home for the holidays, or for some of us, getting home after the holidays. Anybody been at a party or two where you're just like, oh, I need to be home, right? I grew up in a household that was very much a fan of John Candy and his films in the 1980s, and my personal favorite being Uncle Buck, but several good ones, The Great Outdoors, but one of them is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and I love this story about a guy named Dell and a guy named Neil. He's joined by Steve Martin in the story, and if you've seen it, you know that the humorous hijinks and comedy is top-notch. I think one of my favorite parts is where they're accidentally driving the wrong way on an interstate, and their little station wagon rental goes in between two semi-trucks. It sounds scary, but it's hilarious. Trust me on that one if you haven't seen it. But what I love about this movie, it's a going home for the holidays movie. Now, admittedly, it's about Thanksgiving and not Christmas, but I think the principle remains the same. Throughout this movie, in between the comedy and the hijinks and the laughter, there are conversations between Neil and Dell where they talk about they just want to get home. Back to the normal, the everyday, the average, the rhythm of life that they miss when they're out on the road, yes, doing adventurous and fun things, but they're ready to go home. And I think we see a little bit of that in the story of the shepherds. Because after their angelic experience, the journey to Bethlehem, now they go home. They go back to the fields and probably the sheep they left behind, maybe counting them, hoping, please let them all be here. They may be going back to the everyday and the mundane that we talked about a few weeks ago, but here's the thing. They're going back to their everyday, mundane lives, but what has changed? They have changed. Their experiences with the angels and the journey and the manger, their experiences have changed them. They are not the same people as when they left the fields. They returned to the fields different. And how do we know? Because we're told that they are glorifying and praising God. They could have resented it. They could have been like, oh, great. Back to the fields, back to the sheep. They could have resented it and said, man, I want another angel chorus. I want another long journey with an adventure at the end. But instead of resenting going back to the everyday, mundane rhythm of life, they bring the excitement of their experiences and the way they've been transformed, they bring it with them into the everyday, mundane rhythm of life that waits for them in the fields. I love that it talks about how they shared about all the things they heard and all the things they had seen. Wouldn't you have loved to have been a fly on the wall, well, in the air, as they journeyed back from Bethlehem to the fields? And I would love to just hear them say, oh, but what about when this happened? Yeah, but that was great, but what about when this happened? Just the back and the forth of all the things they heard and all the things they'd seen. And I read that phrase this week as I was finishing up my studies, the idea that all the things they had heard and they'd seen. And it reminded me of a phrase that actually shows up a lot in the Old Testament, in the prophets, most noticeably. And it's the phrase or the idea that God's people were sometimes people who had eyes but couldn't see, and had ears but couldn't hear. One of the best examples, listen to these words from Ezekiel chapter 12. Son of man, you are living among a rebellious people. They have eyes to see but do not see, and ears to hear but do not hear, for they are a rebellious people. Through the life of Jesus, through his travels and his teaching and his healing and his preaching and his death, he will have people who will continue to have eyes but not see and ears but not hear. And let me, you know, reality check for a moment. Usually the most religious people had the hardest time having eyes that could see and ears that could hear. But how amazing is it that after the proclamations of prophets for generations, that God's people had eyes but couldn't see and ears but couldn't hear, now these lowly shepherds, on the way back from Bethlehem, we are told that they could not stop talking about all the things they had seen and heard. It's as if the darkness is starting to lift just a little bit at a time. And the light of God's presence, the Emmanuel presence, is beginning to shine. So a few things for us to think about, pray about as we finish our time. And then actually to close today, I have a prayer that we're all going to share in together, a Christmas prayer in response to this series and specifically today's message. But before we do that, just a few things to consider prayerfully, because we don't just want to hear the word, we want to respond as well. Here's the first one. Does Jesus still amaze you? If not, this week, reread the stories of what he's done. Read one of the gospel stories. Read Luke. You have a 2-chapter head start. There you go. Read Luke's gospel. Remember what he's done. Or find out about what he's still doing. Talk to or find out what missionaries are experiencing on the front edge of some of the places where the gospel is still very, very new news. Let Jesus mesmerize you. Secondly, are you more likely to treasure the value or ponder the mystery of God's grace? And this week, whichever is your natural inclination, try the opposite. If you're somebody who treasures it but doesn't think much about the mystery, do the opposite. Or if you love the mystery of it all but don't treasure it as much, then do that this week. Lastly, ask God to open your eyes and your ears to just one person that you might see in the fields of your life this holiday season, just one person who maybe needs to see or hear about the gift of God's grace. I'm not asking you to pray about preaching to a room of 1,000 people, just maybe one person in the everyday rhythm of the fields of your life that you might see during this holiday time who needs to see or hear about the gift of God's grace. So take a moment to pray, reflect. If you want to close your eyes and bow your head, if that's helpful, do that. Or read through the words on the screen. And after a moment or two of allowing the Spirit to speak to each one of our hearts individually, I'm going to invite you to stand with me as we close in prayer together.